Some of you may remember W.C. Fields was a comic in the 30s and the 40s, and he said that he never wanted to get on stage with either dogs or children because they would always upstage you. If he had known Richard, he would have said, "And Richard Cobb." So, you know, let me say something about Richard quickly before we get on to my topic. And it's really part of my topic. You know, I am a way station for a lot of people in spiritual distress. And I get calls, and when I really can't handle it anymore, I send them over to Richard. And in spite of Gloria's illness, and in spite of all the challenges he has, he will take the time to help these people. And if that isn't kingdom living, I don't know what is. So Richard is really special, and we should look to emulate his example, even if he did take 15 minutes from me. That's true. I said take 30, I can come back this week. Anyway, and I'm suffering from a little bit of a cold, so if that's, you know, the Pope was in town, or not in town, but in the country, and I don't know how many of you have Time Warner Cable, but they like to play tricks with you about what stations come in and what don't come in, doesn't come in. So I wanted to watch the Pope, and I just purchased a book called Francis Among the Wolves, which is a fabulous book. Anyway, so for whatever reason, our television would only play MSNBC during the part of the Pope's visit. And in some ways, I think it was great because Chris Hayes, who's one of their, I don't know if star is not the right word, but one of their broadcasters who has a show, and Rachel Maddow, who is an avowed lesbian, both said that there is an incredible spiritual hunger in America that is not being fulfilled. And then they had on the pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York. If you ever go to New York, that's one of the two churches you should visit. If you like powerful preaching, and the odd part about that church is about half African-American, about half Caucasian, and they get along, but don't go there expecting to be comforted. You are going to be afflicted. Because he is going to talk about kingdom living in the most common way. And so he talked about this incredible spiritual hunger, which is not being fulfilled. Does anybody know the first commandment? If you do, shout it out. Yep, that's exactly right. So, and in our society, we have false gods. There's a book called Biology, and it's spelled B-U-Y. And I wanted to get it this morning, but my wife put it somewhere else. That's why I always have my Kindle usually, because I can keep track of that. But I read the book. My sister sent it to me, and her husband read it, who is an elder of the Anglican Church. Worrying my daughter a little bit, your granddaughter and my sister, because he says after he retires from the government, he wants to become an Anglican priest. One of the points in the book is that Madison Avenue tries to sell you false stuff. They try to sell you status. I have a Lexus. I have status. You know, if you use Pepsodent, you get a bright smile. People will love you. I mean, watch the commercials, except for the drug, and even the drug commercials. In the background, everybody is happy, right? They're telling you that sudden death can occur from this drug, but don't worry about that. Look at all the healthy people behind there. So in the book, it talks about that what we get for spiritual guidance in the United States is fake sugar. In other words, it's not nourishing. And so even even, and Pope Francis had a dialogue with some agnostics, and even they agree that this is a major problem. Now, we are lucky, very lucky, and I'm probably the luckiest person in this room, because we know where to get spiritual sustenance from. We know that Jesus Christ is Lord. And if you turn to Jesus and you turn to him daily, and I was very sick yesterday, but I read my Bible, and it helps. And, you know, there are no coincidences in life. My wife was going to pick me up in Rochester, and a friend of hers gave her great courses on the ancient world. And she put it in my CD player and in my car, and I turned it on yesterday, and the lecture was on early Christians and about the Jews. So the reason that the Jews and then the Christians had problems with the emperor is they didn't care if you worshiped Jesus. That wasn't the problem, or you worshiped Yahweh. But you also had to worship the emperor. And Jews were very stubborn people. They thought there was only one God. And when the Christianity came about, Christians think there's only one God. And that meant you couldn't hold office. There was a whole bunch of things. They actually put Christians and Jews together in some ghettos, the first one being in Alexandria. And when the great Jewish revolt happened in 66 A.D., it's estimated that the Romans put 1.2 million people to the sword. And based upon digging up corpses and stuff in Israel, the common belief is that between 25 and 50% of the people that were killed were actually Christians. And the Romans, it's actually in there, Titus didn't care. And Titus wouldn't take a victory wreath because he said their God had abandoned them. Apparently he didn't have any faith in 1948, the year Israel was founded. So when you read, and by the other way, the World Health Organization said the number one disease in the world is depression. And that feeling that you're out there all alone. And in this history book, the other thing that it says is all the other gods, and he goes through, I mean, thank God there's no test. They had so many gods that you couldn't get them all written down on a paper. Those gods had no love, no compassion. We were all about trying to keep them happy so they wouldn't kill us. So they're more like a policeman in Ferguson than a true God. And so when Jesus comes along on the scene and starts talking about compassion and love and a God that loves you, that was a revolutionary concept. Now, in our own small way, we need to do more. We need to redouble our efforts to bring people here because we need more people in the kingdom, and so many people are not invited. There's a question about the churches, and one of the things that has happened both on the evangelical level and even and on the mainline level is that they are not proselytizing or inviting. And if they do invite, they do it in such a strict manner. They don't let the person warm up. They just want them to go from 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds. Now, when I came into this group, I was given all the time in the world just to listen and hear about Christ before I made my decision. There was absolutely no pressure. But I was invited, and people continued to invite me, and look what happened. I showed up. Some things, are unavoidable. One more thing before I read you from Mark. In Israel, at the time of Jesus, there were people that were called Zacharias. And roughly translated into Aramaic, it means knife men. And these knife men were a portion of the Jewish population that believed in overthrowing Rome, and they believed that there was going to be a Messiah sent to overthrow Rome, and if you didn't follow their dictates, then you would be knifed. And the estimate is they killed thousands of people. So when you listen to Mark, and I want to make this clear. I don't want anybody to walk out and say, oh, my God, he has no faith in Jesus. But Jesus was aware of these knife men, and if he had been knifed, he wouldn't have died. That wasn't his mission to die. But that would have exposed what he was doing before his time was ready. So when he tells people don't tell anybody, part of it has to do with not wanting to be standing out. And also, if he said he was the Christ, all hell would break loose, literally, because these knife men wanted a Messiah, king, warrior, you know, and Jesus, hell, he's talking about compassion. So, and, you know, love the Romans, and these guys are wanting to start another war. And it's always easier to start a war than try to go into kingdom living. So, it's really important in Mark, and most people misread Mark. Does anybody know why Jesus did miracles? I know Richard knows. It wasn't because he was sent on earth to do miracles. It was a form of advertising so that people were to pay attention to his spiritual methods. But we human beings, we're an impatient lot, and we are also sometimes lazy. So what they wanted was that he just go perform as many miracles as he could. You know, they hadn't invented coffee yet, but they would have been, if they had, they'd have been caffeinating him all the time. And the other thing about Mark is it shows the conflict between trying to give spiritual sustenance and to give physical sustenance. And that is a very difficult proposition to deal with. So we got to be really, really careful when we talk about the loaves and the fishes, because people are misled by that. All right. I was trying to stop at 8:30. I'm going to read this to you and then I'll stop. This is from Eugene Peterson's version of the Bible. And here is what he said. A meal for the 4,000. This is Mark 8. About this same time, he again found himself with a hungry crowd on his hands. He called his disciples together. The crowd is breaking my heart. They have stuck with me for 3 days, and now they have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will faint along the way. Some of them have come a long distance. Now, two parts before I read the rest. A, they stayed there for 3 days because of his message. And B, we know that the second feeding was mostly Gentiles. So he was already thinking about spreading his message worldwide, which was also something that Jews didn't do. His disciple responded, "What do you expect us to do about it? Buy food out here in the desert?" He asked, how much bread do you have? 7 loaves, they said. So Jesus told the crowd to sit down on the ground, and after giving thanks, he took 7 bread loaves, broke them into pieces, and gave them to his disciples as so they could hand them out to the crowd. They also had a few fish. He pronounced a blessing over the fish and told his disciples to hand them out as well. All right. The crowd ate its fill. 7 sacks of leftovers were collected. There were well over 4,000 at this meal. And then he sent them home. He himself went straight to the boat with his disciples and set out for Dalmanutha, I guess it is. When they arrived, the Pharisees came out and started on him, badgering him to prove himself, pushing him up against the wall. Provoked, he said, "Why does this generation clamor for miraculous guarantees?" So, contaminating youth. He then left them and got back in the boat and headed for the other side. But the disciples forgot to pack a lunch, except for a single loaf of bread. There wasn't a crumb in the boat. Jesus warned, "Be very careful, keep a sharp out for the contaminating yeast of Pharisees and the followers of Herod." Meanwhile, the disciples are finding fault with each other because they have forgotten to bring bread. Jesus overhead, "And why are you fussing because you forgot bread? Don't you see the point of all this? Don't you get it all? Remember the five loaves I broke for the 5,000? How many baskets of leftovers did you pick up?" They said 12. "And the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many bags full of leftovers do you get?" 7. "Do you still not get it?" They arrived at Bethsaida. Some people brought a sightless man and begged Jesus to give him a healing touch. Taking him by the hand, he led him out of the village. He put spit in the man's eyes, laid hands on him, and asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see men. They look like walking trees." So Jesus laid hands on his eyes again. The man looked hard and ever realized that he had recovered perfect sight and saw everything 20/20. All right, the Messiah. And this is really important. Jesus and his disciples headed out for the villages around Caesarea Philippi, and as they walked, he asked, "What do people say I am?" "Some say John the Baptizer," they said. "Others say Elijah. Still others say one of the prophets." And he then asked, And you, what are you saying about me? "Who am I?" Peter gave the answer, "You are Christ, the Messiah." Now, by the way, people believe that this Gospel of Mark is mostly writing down what Peter saw. Jesus warned them to keep quiet, not to breathe a word of it to anyone. He then began explaining things to them. "It is necessary that the Son of Man proceed to an ordeal of suffering, be tried and found guilty by the elders, high priests, and religious scholars. Be killed and after 3 days rise up alive." He said this simply and clearly so they couldn't miss it. But Peter grabbed him in protest, and turning and seeing his disciples wavering, wondering what to believe, Jesus confronted Peter. "Peter, get out of my way. Satan, get lost. You have no idea how God works." Calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, "Anyone who intends to come with me has to let me lead." Now in the Orthodox it says, "Pick up your cross," but that would have been highly unlikely. "You're not in the driver's seat. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me, and I'll show you how self-help is no help at all. Self-sacrifice is the way. My way to saving yourself." Your true self. "What good would it do to get everything you want and lose you, the real you? What could you ever trade your soul for? If any of you are embarrassed over me and the way I am leading you, when you get around your fickle and unfocused friends, know that you are an even greater embarrassment to the Son of Man when he arrives in all the splendor of God with his army of holy angels." So, to conclude, in Mark, there's two main points. One, he tells them that he is the Christ. And two, he shows that even though he fed the crowds, the main thing that people need is compassion and belief and love. And sometimes that involves sacrifice. The one editorial, maybe an editorial and a half, I will give you is being a follower of Jesus and living in kingdom living is not always easy. The other part, people are always telling me, "Well, I don't have to come to Bible study. I'm already saved." Well, if you may think you're already saved, But it's a continuing process. The other thing that comes out of Mark is that God wants a dialogue with you. That was a somewhat in the Old Testament, but it was even worse or more emphasized in the New Testament. So that means that you just can't wait for God to sit on your front stoop next to you or your staircase. You have to go out and get to God and reach for that sacred communion. And in spite of all of travails, it is the best thing that can ever happen to you in life. And even if you tell people who do not appear to be fertile at the moment, the seed will be set. And we, as part of the remnant, need to be even more vigilant and more confiding of what we already know, which is the truth. And we need, and unfortunately, we're now competing in a marketplace which sells false goods. And if you just get that Lincoln MDX, you don't need God. Anyway, I love you guys, and I want you all to shout with me, Jesus is Lord.
Jesus is Lord.